the Supreme Court ruled that a Louisiana law restricting abortion access was unconstitutional. The New England Patriots may have a new quarterback when/if football returns. And is it time to update the American flag? We've got Megan Hatcher-Mays of the organizing group Indivisible with us to talk about the latest push to make the District of Columbia the 51st state.
The date, June 29th, 2020.
The time, news o'clock. Hey, everybody, I'm Hayes Brown.
And I'm Casey Rackham. Welcome to News O'Clock.
I got to start off with saying, fuck you, Mississippi flag and your Confederate decal dealy. Get out of here. Hate ya. And I'm very glad that apparently everyone else does, too.
I looked it up and I was like, how is this their flag?
That is the eternal question. Like, it's impossible to think of a worse state flag. And there's some really bad ones out there. Just like really terrible ones. And not just for racist reasons, just like Ohio's I also hate because it's a weird like pennant shape and I'm mad at them in general for it. But I am so glad that the House and Senate of Mississippi yesterday voted to get rid of this flag. The governor kind of reluctantly said that he's going to sign the bill. No idea what the new flag is going to look like. I think they have to like look into what it will be at this point.
They should. I love California's flag. We're just a bear.
Right? It's so good. I do think California's is up there. I think it's either New Mexico, Arizona, one of those Sunbelt states. It's also really choice. Mm-hmm. And never forget, and Colorado with their fucking C. So can't you forget where you are? Just look at the flag. C. Colorado. That's where I'm at. All right. As fun as that is, it's time for today's top stories. First up, big news over the weekend. Russia reportedly offered a cash bounty to Taliban-linked militants to kill U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. And according to U.S. intelligence, they may have succeeded. According to the New York Times and subsequent reporting from the Washington Post, that determination came after large amounts of U.S. cash were found at Taliban outposts and through interrogation of captured Afghan fighters. U.S. officials are now examining which attacks might have been linked to the plot, with at least several U.S. forces suspected to have been killed as a result. But despite the assessment from the intelligence community coming in March, the U.S. has yet to figure out an official response. To make things even more interesting, as the debate in the administration about how to respond was ongoing, the U.S. was in the middle of conducting peace talks with the Taliban to allow U.S. forces to withdraw from Afghanistan. Meanwhile, the president was pushing for Russia to be readmitted to the G7. Last night, Trump denied that he'd ever been briefed about the situation and claimed that the New York Times had made up the whole story. 2. The coronavirus's U.S. summer tour continues apace, prompting states to pause or roll back their reopening plans. The U.S. saw yet another record day of reported COVID-19 cases yesterday, making it 5 days in a row. The new record number is 40,587 across the United States. Even though three states are making up the bulk of the cases, Texas, Florida, and California, the increases are adding up across the South and Southwest. At least 11 states have paused or rolled back their plans to lift restrictions meant to stop the virus's spread. California has ordered bars to be closed back down, and in Florida, Fort Lauderdale and Miami's beaches will be off limits for the 4th of July weekend. Vice President Mike Pence sort of acknowledged the surges this weekend when he canceled two campaign stops in Arizona and Florida. And 3, the Supreme Court ruled this morning that Louisiana's limits on abortion clinics are unconstitutional. In the first major abortion case of the Trump administration, the justices decided in a 5-4 ruling to strike down a 2014 law that said abortion providers must also have admitting access at a nearby hospital. Abortion rights advocates have argued that the law would put a limit on abortion, as getting admitting access is difficult and hospitals have to accept people with a medical emergency anyway. The case was similar to one decided 4 years ago related to a law in Texas, and that similarity is what got Chief Justice John Roberts to cast the deciding vote. In his concurring opinion, Roberts wrote that even though he disagreed with how the Texas case was decided, the law requires that similar cases be judged similarly. And since the Louisiana law, quote, provided a burden on access to abortion just as severe as the last case, it had to go.
Okay, yeah, we need to talk about how California just closed back down all their restaurants. I saw this hilarious tweet from Twitter user Anna Klassen, who said, LA Mayor, we're opening bars and restaurants and gyms and hair salons. Also, LA Mayor, 5 minutes later, well, don't go to them, you fucking idiots. And it's so true. It's just, I was driving around, I saw people just like at bars, at these restaurants, and just not practicing the rules that there are, right? And I also want to talk about the restaurants that are staying open to try and like make their business survive and feed people and the way they're being treated. So I go to this one taco restaurant called Hugo's Tacos, and they just released a statement saying that they have to close down. They said, our taco stands are exhausted by the constant conflicts over guests refusing to wear masks. Staff have been harassed, called names, and had objects and liquids thrown at them. I mean,
Jesus Christ.
What is happening?
What is wrong with these people? No, don't. You shouldn't be sorry, Casey. You're not the one throwing objects and liquids at people for trying to keep others safe. That's so fucking stupid. I'm sorry. It just is.
If pregnant women can give birth with a mask on, you can wear it to the taco restaurant.
You can. I don't even get these people. They're just... is my current statement. That's my statement. You can quote me on that moving forward.
I will. Okay, well, here are some stories that have been popular on the internet today. Some sports news from this weekend, because I am now somehow a resident sports reporter. The New England Patriots have signed a potential new lead quarterback, former Carolina Panthers star Cam Newton. The lead quarterback position with the Pats is open after six-time Super Bowl winner Tom Brady decided to leave Boston for sunny Florida earlier this year, taking a job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But it was a big surprise for most people that Brady might be replaced by Newton, who was booted from the Panthers earlier this year. The Panthers claim that Newton wanted to be released to be traded, but Newton was like, the fuck I did. The one-year deal is being seen as a win-win for Newton and the Patriots. Newton has been prone to injuries lately, but is a talented player who led his team to the Super Bowl in 2015. The Patriots, meanwhile, get to stay competitive after losing Brady and only have to pay Cam for 1 year if things don't work out, which, lol, I don't think the Patriots are worried about money, but okay.
I mean, they might be in the future. I mean, they still have Bill Belichick as their coach, aka Darth Vader of sports with his Deflategate, etc. But I mean, without Brady, PeopleWork and Gronk also resigned too recently. He retired too recently. So people were kind of wondering, well, what are the Patriots going to do? Also, I got to point out, I love that the white, very white Patriots now might potentially have a black star quarterback. Who, people out there, if you've not seen the outfits that Cam Newton wears to his press conferences, Google it after you finish listening to this, because, oh, buddy, is it worth it?
They're so good. And another story I wanted to talk about today. We're getting a new Pirates of the Caribbean movie, this time with Margot Robbie taking the lead. That's right, the lead. We are finally free of Johnny Depp's walking catchphrase of a character, Captain Jack Sparrow. So there's not a lot of details out yet, but the movie isn't meant to be a sequel to the previous movies. Instead, it's going to be a whole new story under the franchise name. Robbie will be reuniting on this voyage with screenwriter Christina Hodson, who's been tapped to write the script. Hodson also wrote Birds of Prey, which Robbie starred in playing Harley Quinn. And honestly, I'm super excited because Hodson wrote Bumblebee, the Transformers prequel, which I'm pretty sure smashed in the box office. And she's writing The Flash and Batgirl. So it's like she knows action. And this is, I just feel like it's going to be just one very big adventure that's just going to be wonderful. And what we like got when these stories, Pirates of the Caribbean, first started, you know?
I am also like super, I'm really interested to see where this goes, because I mean, the last Pirates of the Caribbean film, my fiance absolutely loved it. A lot of people did not love it. So I'm really curious to see like where they go with this like world that they built up.
Okay, yes, that is the right reaction. And the wrong reaction is that this movie is already being Ghostbustered, which is basically people are upset that it's a woman leading this movie instead of Johnny Depp now. So great.
I'm sorry. As we have been recording this, I got a message from my fiance. She said she wanted me to clarify. She actually hated the movie. She just liked The Mermaid. So I, for the record, putting that out there. All right, when we come back, we've got Megan Hatcher-Mays, Director of Democracy Policy with Indivisible, talking DC statehood. Stay right there.
Welcome back. There are over 700,000 residents of the District of Columbia, the roughly 10 square mile area that houses the U.S. capital city. But because it is not officially a state, not one of them has a voting member of Congress that can make decisions for them on things like the taxes they pay or the judges who rule on their court cases. Last week, D.C. got closer than ever to changing that.
To talk about this latest effort for D.C. statehood, we're joined today by Megan Hatcher Mays. She's the Director of Democracy Policy with Indivisible, a grassroots political organization. Thanks for joining us, Megan.
Thanks so much for having me. So excited to be here.
Last week, the House of Representatives voted to approve the District of Columbia as a new state named Washington Douglas Commonwealth. How big of a deal was this vote?
It's the biggest deal ever for people who have been working on or paying attention to D.C. statehood. This is decades and decades of advocacy, trying to raise awareness about how important D.C. statehood was. And it really wasn't that long ago that I think most people thought of it as a very fringe issue. So the fact that it even got as many Democratic co-sponsors as it did before it passed is a massive historic deal. And the fact that it passed the House is incredible and a little bit surprising, but great.
So it's been over 50 years since a new state was admitted. And so a lot of people don't know what the process is. So what comes next?
Yeah, so DC is following what's called the Tennessee Plan. Basically, when Tennessee became a state, they put everything together first. They put together their constitution. They put together exactly how they wanted everything to operate in their state before they became a state. And they basically took a vote. They were able to demonstrate they had the will of the people of Tennessee to become a state. So DC is following basically that same blueprint. We put together a constitution. The mayor put together a bunch of working groups about how we wanted our state to operate once we're admitted. So all you have to do is take your plan, your Tennessee plan or your DC plan in this case, to Congress and say, okay, we have everything all set up. All you have to do is approve it. And so this was the first step in approval. Now, the next step would be that the Senate takes it up for consideration. And that's not going to happen. That is not going to happen under Mitch McConnell.
Point blank. No way.
He is not going to bring it up. He has called DC statehood full bore socialism. So enfranchising 700,000 people in the District of Columbia is socialist now. So he will not bring it up. So I think the fight for Indivisibles for the rest of this year will be to get as many Democratic co-sponsors on the Senate version of the bill as possible, so that if we win back the Senate in November, we will be good to go on January 21st, 2021.
Senator Tom Cotton, who's a Republican from Arkansas, seemed to make a lot of people mad last week when he spoke out against the idea of D.C. statehood on the Senate floor.
Yes, Wyoming is smaller than Washington by population, but it has three times as many workers in mining, logging, and construction, and 10 times as many workers in manufacturing. In other words, Wyoming is a well-rounded, working-class state. A new state of Washington would not be.
Megan, how would you have responded if you were in the Senate?
I would have said your dog whistle is super loud today, Senator Cotton. Working class is doing a lot of work in that statement. And I was one of the people who got mad at Tom Cotton for saying it. Basically, what he's suggesting is that there's like, it's kind of like the real America versus fake America thing that we all went through in 2008, that the people who live in Wyoming are real people because they are miners or they do whatever. And DC are not real people because a lot of people who live here work for the federal government or are lawyers or whatever the case may be. But really, what working class is doing there is signaling that Wyoming is white. Wyoming is really, really white. And DC really, really isn't. We're mostly not white. So DC used to be called Chocolate City. It was a majority black jurisdiction for years and years and years, centuries probably, up until very recently. So now it's just under 50% of the people who live here are black people, but the majority of people who live here are not white. And so when Tom Cotton says something like, Wyoming's working class, and what he's really saying is, we're not giving statehood to black people and people of color, and we're not giving it to people who have jobs other than working class jobs, even though DC is also very working class. But he's signaling something. He's blowing on his dog whistle there when he says stuff like that.
There's an argument from some Republicans, like President Trump, that this is just a power play by Democrats to try to swing control of the Senate, since DC would get two senators if they succeed. Is there any truth in that?
Well, you know, that's just not a reason why we either admit or don't admit a state to the union. I mean, the whole reason that it just is.
I mean, it used to be.
What I was going to say is that if that was a reason to deny statehood to a state, like there would not be southern states. Like the whole reason that a bunch of states, very small, mostly white, like rural states in the South and elsewhere, got to become states is because they wanted to hand a lot of political power to a shrinking minority of people. And that's what that was all about. So all DC is saying is there's actually a lot more of us than there were of those guys back in the day. So let's just balance that out. Would our senators be Democrats? Yeah, probably. Almost certainly. If they weren't Democrats, they'd be Working Families Party or they'd be DSA or whatever. Yes, they'd be very progressive senators. There's no doubt in my mind. But that's not a reason to deny the vote to 700,000 people.
So there's a plan that's being tossed around that says, well, if DC folks want votes, the territory should go back to Maryland. Is that a backup plan if we do want people to have voting rights in DC?
No, that's another what I call like the greatest hits of bad faith anti-DC statehood arguments. This idea that, well, if you really want representation, you should just retrocede into Maryland, because Maryland, along with Virginia, had donated some of their land to the federal government to make the federal district. Now, the only problem with that is that nobody in DC wants to go back to Maryland. We took a vote on this, and 86% of the people who voted for statehood. They did not vote to retrocede into Maryland. The other, just a small, minor problem, is that nobody in Maryland wants DC either. So, like, this is not an operable plan where somehow we just go back into Maryland. And the reason they say that is, or the reason Republicans make that argument is that somehow it would cause some great problem if the federal district where they do their business was surrounded by a state. But that doesn't stop being true if we go back to Maryland. You're still surrounded. You're surrounded by two states in that scenario. So it just is something that they make up as a way to have a legitimate reason to oppose DC statehood without having to say what's really on their mind, which is that they do not want to enfranchise Black people, people of color, and people who generally vote Democratic. And so they say, oh, you should just go back into Maryland, just kind of ignoring the fact that Maryland doesn't want us and we don't want to be a part of Maryland either.
So what is the next step after Senate? Or I know you have a strong 2021 plan, but if it doesn't pass under Senate, what's the plan?
Like if we don't win back the Senate?
Yes.
You know, the plan is to keep fighting. People have been fighting for this for decades, for hundreds of years. You know, this first DC statehood bill is a little bit newer to the game. I think the first time it got introduced was 50 years ago, something like that. So people are going to keep fighting for this. So that's not, you don't stop fighting for something just because you have the numbers stacked against you. And even if we don't win back the Senate this fall, that does not mean this fight is over. This is a lot of momentum that is not going to lose steam just because, you know, for a couple of years, we don't have the numbers in the Senate.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
If you've been browsing Netflix in the last couple of weeks, you may have spotted a pretty odd-looking movie in the top 10 most watched movie stream, a Polish film named 365 Days. And if you clicked on that film to watch it, well, I'm really fucking sorry. The short recap of the plot, a woman is kidnapped by an Italian gangster who gives her a year to fall in love with him.
BuzzFeed News' culture writer Saatchi Kohl wrote about 365 Days in a piece titled, "The most popular movie on Netflix right now is basically porn." And the review was not positive at all. In fact, none of the reviews are. The movie currently has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. Thankfully, Saatchi is here with us for today's edition of Rant O'Clock. Hi, Saatchi.
How are you?
Good. Okay, so we're going to give you a solid minute and a half to let it all out. Tell us what's wrong with this movie and why you found it so disturbing. Ready?
I'm always ready, first of all. I don't care for the presumption that I'm not ready to be mad.
We will never presume that again.
Thank you.
Okay, on your mark, get set, go.
I kind of admire the audacity of this movie because it's so bad, but it still wants to pretend like it's anything other than 2 hours of like raw dog boneyarding between two adults. I'm going to put that in quotes because I don't really know what they are. I'm not completely sure that they are human. And then there's a lot of rapey undertones, I would say, and then rapey overtones, actually, because I think if you kidnap a woman and tell her that she has to live in your giant mansion where you have a portrait of her painted from years prior when you maybe ran into her when your father was killed during a drug deal, I don't really know what that was. One might assume that she would feel like she was in a compromised position and would have to, for example, watch you receive oral sex from a sex worker that you bring in to, quote, show her what she's missing. It's so bad. I've seen it twice.
Wow. Twice.
Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong. It's not a like, it's so bad, it's good. It's a, it's so bad, it's bad, don't watch it kind of scenario, right?
Well, I mean, if for some reason you have some barriers in your life stopping you from typing Pornhub.com into your browser, then I encourage anybody to watch it. Do I think that the people watching it are sexually active adults with access to high quality pornography? No, I'm pretty sure it's probably teenagers who are on their parents' Netflix account. And when their parents go to bed, they are just fucking mashing their meat.
Terrible descriptor.
Well, but, did I ask to come on your show? No, you called me and you know what you're gonna get. So
that's true.
So I did read like a pretty intense recap of this, and it kind of seems like this isn't even something you should be going to for porn, because I've been seeing a lot of trigger warnings too, like what the situations you're describing, like rape.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first, at least the first half of the movie is like so bizarrely rapey and also really slut-shamey. There's a lot of stuff around if, you know, this woman wears a certain outfit, then her kidnapper boyfriend would go up to her and be like, you're causing trouble. Now I have to fight people for your honor because your butt's out or whatever. You know, that's really confusing. He bursts in on her while she's trying on lingerie at one point at a store, because there are four makeover scenes.
What?
In this movie. There are four pretty women makeover scenes in this movie. This girl is constantly going to, this is what's also odd for a kidnapping victim. She is buying a lot of clothing in public. Like, it's not like,
right,
seeing,
like, is no one looking for her?
Yeah, that's what,
period?
I couldn't figure out. It didn't really, it, I guess they kind of offer you the presumption that this guy like owns the police, so nobody's going to do anything. I don't know. It still seems kind of fishy.
So question then. Given how terrible it is, despite the fact that they seem to be making sequels, does Netflix have any sort of, I don't know, responsibility to either put a trigger warning on this thing or keep it out of the algorithm for top recommended movies?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they will do the latter, because I don't think that they actually care. And I think the algorithm functions as it functions, which is as a robot. So the algorithm doesn't care whether or not a movie is good or not. And it doesn't care whether or not a movie sort of has these sexual assault tones in it. Doesn't matter. With the former, yeah, they probably should. I think it would be nice for some people to know, because I don't think you get that from just looking at the trailer or from reading the description. You have no idea what you're about to get into. But I mean, if Netflix is going to start making warnings on content, they can start with like 13 Reasons Why or a million other things that they have on their programming that is sincere. I at least think with this movie, it's kind of clear it's garbage. Like it's so overtly goofy and bad. And from what I've seen on TikTok from like younger people who are super impressionable with this kind of content, they know this is bullshit. They're watching it because they kind of, you know, you want to watch like two people fuck on a boat. All right. Well, I don't begrudge anybody that. In that scene, they both seemed very into it. I encourage all consenting adults to fuck each other on a boat. Please do it away from me. I do not like water or people. But, you know, there's way worse things on Netflix that I think young people are going to be affected by negatively.
Sachi, thank you so much for explaining this to us and making sure that we don't have to watch this movie. We really appreciate it.
That's it for today. Join us tomorrow for what we're hoping will be our best episode ever. No particular reason. I just like being the best.
And remember, wearing a mask is cool. Spider-Man wears a mask. You like Spider-Man.
Be sure to subscribe to News O'Clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you go for your sound stories.
And please take the time to leave us a rating and a review. It helps us figure out what you like about the show versus what you love about the show. And remember to set your alarm so you never miss an episode of News O'Clock.